Have you ever woken to a sweet morning rain? Had your cup of coffee while it pattered on your window pane? Have you ever seen the sun going down in the horizon, sinking like a red supernova into the blue?
Blessings, everyone. So wonderful, and I'm always honored to be able to share a little bit of time with you. As we consider things like Black History Month, and we look at history, I'm a person who loves to experiment with the word beyond. And if I were to experiment with the word history and take it beyond what our mind can conceive of that, one of the things that comes to me is origin story. So not only what is our history as a human in this sort of spacesuit, but what is the origin story of us, let's say, as a soul? When you open your services every week, you sing, I'm only here for God. And that's a very powerful statement of declaration to sing and to say and to hopefully abide by. And we get to ask ourselves, am I abiding by that? If I'm only here for God, or let's say if I'm only here for my origin story, then that is saying that we are only here to remember our true nature. And that's really sort of the emphasis or the focus of what I want to share with you this morning. Like, I'm only here for God. I'm only here to not only remember my true nature, but to live from that space of my true nature consistently. And a friend of mine named Debbie posted this meme about a week or so ago, and it said, "You are the altar, not the sacrifice." And it was such a sort of goosebumply visual perspective for me because it coalesced beautifully with this idea of what I've been studying on and practicing in myself and wanting to speak to you, and that is, We are our true nature. We are not the product or the invention of our conceptual mind. And that's a lot of word salad sometimes on a early Sunday morning, but we are our true nature. We are the altar or the foundation or the fundamentals of our origin story of being the representation or the vessel of God. We are not the sacrificial invention and story and wounding and perceptions of a dualistic world. And as much as we love to say that and maybe nod our heads in agreement with that, it does not mean that we are living from that. And it does not mean that we understand or even practice that. But if we sing, "I'm only here for that," everything we just referenced, if I'm only here to be the vessel or the embodiment of my origin story as a soul, if I'm only here to exhibit my true nature, even in the absence, the apparent absence of its receptivity, then do I do it anyway? I came up a while ago with a sort of synthesis of what my mode of living is, and I call it the gospel of anyway. And so what that means is that there is nothing in this external world that will help champion me in my origin story, or that will protect or guarantee certain outcomes, because this is a plane of dualism. This is a right and wrong, good and bad. It's part of the curriculum of being human, right? And so it becomes up to me to hold true to the idealization of my origin story. And so there's a long list of what's called the paradoxical commandments. And one of them that I think about often is you can spend your entire life building something and it will be destroyed overnight. Build it anyway. And you start to see the power of that paradox. You start to see the power and the requirements of living only here for your true nature, your origin story. Because if we're looking to do that only through the championing of an outer world, then we will be perpetually disappointed. But we're in the world anyway, right? We have incarnated into these personalities, into these spacesuits, if you will. And so we get to practice. And that's what I want to talk to you today about. You are the altar, not the sacrifice. You are your origin story of that which is God, not all of the perceived stories, not even the definitions that we as our humanity have invented. And so when I think about that, I'm in this Buddhist meditation course. It's a over 3 month long course. And the facilitator was telling us a story about someone coming up to Albert Einstein. And I love this because I watched Oppenheimer recently, and my favorite thing in that movie is all of the scenes around Albert Einstein, because there was so much juiciness there in terms of the way in which that film was constructed and the wisdom that he imparted. But the story that my teacher said was that someone came up to him and asked him what it must be like to be called a genius. And then they said, "What is a requirement to be called a genius?" And the story says that he thought for a minute and he said affability. And so affability by definition means kind of courteous and good-natured, but there are different levels to the word affability. And he said, "If I can't explain the most complex theories, like the theory of relativity, to a five-year-old or to a day laborer without them understanding it, then I am not a genius." And I really resonated with that, because to me, it was sort of a reminder that our origin story or our true nature is not complex. It's very simple. But what we do in our sacrificial minds is we make it complex. We add all of these steps and variables and degrees of difficulty, but at its core, you as the altar is a very simple thing. You are God. You are a vessel of God. You are an instrument of God, to the degree that your consciousness, your level of self-awareness, can invite that in and have it exemplify through your personality, through your persona, through your individualization. So as Rumi always reminds us, we are not just a drop in the ocean. We are the ocean in a drop. We are the altar within this skin suit, within this personality, regardless of what our history is. And that becomes the clarion call by which you and I get to participate and work towards and practice towards every single day. So affability, Einstein said, if I cannot explain these things in a simplified manner, then I'm not a genius. So my goal is always, how do I simplify this? How do I go beyond word salad or just reciting or regurgitating something from a book and give you something that invites you in to become not only renewed, but excited of the reminder of your origin story, your history as a divine being. Another example of that this teacher was sharing with us was, I didn't know this, but in the country of Tibet, there are no parochial schools. There are only monasteries. And in Tibet, women are not allowed into the monastery. And so by deductive reasoning, they have no formalized education. And there was this moment in history where one of the Rinpoches, one of the holy monks, listened with compassion to one of the elder women. And she said, you know, we don't want to come back and do this cyclical separation dualistic dance just like everybody else. Why can't you teach us what you teach in the monasteries? We too would like to experience that form of enlightenment. And this Rinpoche took compassion on them and he says, well, yeah, of course, everybody deserves to know this. And so this kind of quick and simple process, they call it the enlightenment for little old ladies. That's not a derogatory term. That is reflecting upon how this came to be. And in the history and the chronicling of this particular story, these little old ladies in Tibet became enlightened. And I thought that was fascinating too. And I thought, how do we do this? And so I'm going to attempt all of us to see how affable we can be. So first of all, You and I can understand that one does not learn how to ride a bike by reading about it, correct? No matter how attracted we might be to cycling and the desire to want to do that, we don't learn how to ride a bike simply by reading it. We become a bike rider from the attempts and the subsequent mastery of developing the ability to ride. You and I don't know or experience that union, that unity, and the realization that we are only here for God by reading or sitting passively and letting someone talk at us or sing at us. We become rooted, deeply rooted in the awareness and the enthusiastic beauty of being here for God by getting out there and finding all of the particular myths about our lives, about our inadequacies. I'm to this, I'm to that, and busting through those, being a myth buster in order to fully experience being a vessel that is here for God. And will everyone do that? Of course not. That too is a part of being human. You will see that there are those who intellectually process this stuff, and then there are those who are going out and putting it into practice. And one of the most thrilling things as part of a call, I don't sometimes even call myself a teacher anymore. It's like a sharer. We're just mutually sharing because we're all in this practice pool, right? And so from this place of sharing, I become enthusiastic by those who are willing to get into the water, by those who are willing to get on the bike, by those who are willing to go into the seeming defeatism and begin to bust through that illusional thing in order to make it more of a reality. When you look up the word pioneer, when you look up anyone probably that you even admire and are inspired by, that's exactly what was going on in their trajectory of living. I don't think that anybody that we are inspired by gained what it is that they gained by just simply reading a book. They got out there. They got out there and they removed all of the veils of illusion so that they could remember that they are the altar, not the sacrifice. And so in this enlightenment for little old ladies, step one was then the distinction of what we call the difference between our true nature and conceptual mind. So first of all, what is a concept? A concept is an invention. And I bet you've heard this before, but a concept is even, you ready? Man. Woman, old, young, artist, businessman, lawyer, doctor, teacher, son, daughter, ill, well, fat, thin. All of those are concepts. And you're like saying, well, wait a minute, David. No, those are realities. Okay. But could it be that they are relative realities? Meaning their realness only exists within this particular dimension of form. By this dimension of form, I'm talking about this human experience. I'll get even more granular, Earth. This dimension is built upon this dualism, yin-yang. And no matter what type of utopian mindset we are aiming for, yin-yang will always be in this plane. That's why the master teacher Jesus said, be in this what? World. Be in this plane of dualism, but not of it. Don't identify yourself. Don't own your concepts, don't own your definitions or your identities. You will have them because that's a part of the curriculum of being human. But the mastery and the divine remembering and understanding that you are only here for God means that at some point you get fed up with those identifications. And you go out into the seeming limitation to uncover the unlimited nature of God as you in your experience. Again, word salad, if you and I don't get up and go do that some way. If we don't sort of understand what our pain points are, our vulnerabilities are, our fears are, and we go and we actually enter into those things, so that we can bust that particular myth or ownership of being a sacrifice in a world who just simply doesn't dot, 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 dot. You see? And so no matter how many messages or how many inspired talks or how many workshops or how many lessons or how many books that we read about our divinity, it will be impotent with regards to the realization of that unless we begin to learn about or understand conceptual mind. So conceptual mind then is all of the labeling, all of the human construct, every single thing that we have been raised in, domesticated in to believe. It's not wrong. This isn't a right or wrong thing. concept, even what I'm, this is the irony of it, the paradox of it, that even as I'm talking to you, it's conceptual. Again, we can only experience and receive at the level of our particular current awareness, self-awareness. And so as we go out to expand our self-awareness, we have to go, okay, so I think that I am this wounded 60-ish male who ... And I will craft a life around that particular identity, and that will be restrictive. It's like wearing a tight shoe, and I will not know anything different because I will have settled into those concepts. And there's not one soul in human form that isn't saturated around concepts. And so you get to kind of write them down. You get to go and be playful with it and go, wow, there's a lot of concepts going on here. And so there is true nature and there are concepts. And we must start by understanding or even leaning into being willing that what we are mostly ruled by is concepts. Concepts of success and failure. Concepts of this is only good if X number of people show up. It's a concept. And you start to see that we base our emotionality around concepts. Ooh, if this concept is not met, then I will be sad. If this concept is met, then I will be happy. And you start to see the trap of that. Because anything that we push away and anything that we grab at has our power. And so the conceptual world of which you and I are in is not going to go away. So it isn't about trying to eradicate or create this utopia. It's about understanding where you are, which is in this dualistic framework. And once we understand that, and once we begin to playfully realize the rules of this limitation or this duality, then we can begin to invite in, and by invite in, become intentional. And your prayer can even be God or true nature, show me more today of what is possible in order to bust through both conscious and unconscious limitations that I have created loyalty around. And it doesn't have to be something that's begging and pleading. It can be playful and light because your true nature is playful and light. And we began to see then the range of this, because let's talk about this plane of existence. There is war. There is inequality. These inequalities are why we must and do have these months that are recognized for the way in which our inhumanity has continued historically to play itself out. And if anything should empower us to bust through those things, it's what we are talking about today. I don't want to perpetuate the legacy of conceptual mind. I want to be able to offer and experience my true nature. So that first step for the enlightenment, for the little old ladies, that genesis of what Albert Einstein was talking about affability, is getting us to understand the nature of mind. This nature of mind is conceptual in our humanity. I hope that makes sense. And that is something, again, it's not going to go away. You and I are not going to race ahead and outdistance it. It will always be there. You and I will wake up and we will go to the grocery store and the price tag will be wrong, or something will happen, or we'll get a wobbly cart with a wobbly wheel and we'll be upset, or we'll run out of gas, or some sorrow will hit our immediate family, or we will become ill. This physical body will become ill. We will experience loss. with regards to the concept of loss as humanity. We will shed this. People will leave. There will be, quote, quote, the concept of abandonment. There will be, quote, quote, the concept of loss, of disappointment. But if we begin to practice and go, these are concepts, because my true nature, and the thing that I am here for, to be in this world, but not of it. Another way to say it then for today is to be in the concept, but not of the concept. And you know what? Therein lies liberation. Therein lies this thing that we keep talking about, which is freedom. The second part is kind of where most of us on a spiritual path reside, and that is practicing being the witness mind, the part of the mind that can witness the concepts. And ironically, even that part, you know, that's a great deal of Michael Singer's work in The Untethered Soul, is just witnessing the thoughts, but not identifying with the thoughts. Witnessing the circumstance, but not defining ourselves by the circumstance. And here's the funny part about that, or the irony of that, is that even that is dualistic in nature. You know, that's the part where I love how the teacher Ram Dass used to talk about. He goes, part of me wants to still kind of hang out in the witness mind, because there's a part of me, just like the poets Rumi and Hafiz, that loved the beloved and worshiped the beloved. And Ram Dass had a guru, and he would talk about the love of the guru. And in some way, that is our, if you love God, whatever your definition or experience of God is, we are witnessing this thing, but it's still ironically sort of a form of separation. And so if this is a three-step process, then what's the third thing? The third thing then, mind, is I am. I am. I am the true nature. I am that. I am. I am then what? I am awareness. If we really have to use language to describe this no-thingness that is free of identification, it would be that simply what we are is awareness. And Ram Dass used to, his affirmation was, I am loving awareness. And so what does that look like? It means that you and I get up, we pay our bills, we go to work, we raise our family, we schedule, we go through all of the seemingly moving parts of being human. And at the same time, we are aware that we are awareness. We are conscious of the fact that what our true nature is, what our origin story is something indefinable. And so that means that we will come across all of the seeming limitation that the human game presents. But now, instead of reacting to it, we're simply responding to the awareness of what it is, without identifying with it, without huddling around a group of friends and talking about how, as my first teacher, Louise Hay, used to call, talking about the ain't it awfuls. Ain't it awful? Ain't it awful? Ain't it awful? And you can look at the theme, thematic thread in conversations, whether it's people that you go have dinners with or whatever, it usually centers around something like, ain't it awful? Because we identify with that. And so we get to realize that even in that, we are not reacting or identifying with those things. We are now beginning to simply know and understand that wherever we go, God is. Wherever we go, my origin, my true nature, my divine history is. And that is the enlightenment for little old ladies. And that is the affability that Albert Einstein talked about. And that is the most simple way to understand that you are the altar and not the sacrifice. If you will close your eyes wherever you are, even if you're listening to this afterwards, and just begin to breathe with me, well, let's take a meditative moment. You can listen to the chords of this music. You can practice becoming aware of simply your in and out breath. You might even want to marvel a little bit by the fact that you don't have to govern or manage your breath, that it just is. And what is the origin of that breath? Is it an intelligence? Is it a meticulousness? Is it life itself, even when I don't recognize it or acknowledge it? That's what breath is. That's what the heartbeat is. Those are but a few things, a few gifts of our origin story, of our unwavering history as a divine being, of the power, the wisdom, the love, the all-knowingness that resides within us and wants to meet us in whatever we have defined as fear or limitation. And as that scripture says, behold, I stand at the door and knock. What is the thing that is knocking? It is your origin story. It is your true nature. Behold, I stand at the door of your consciousness and I am knocking. And if anyone will open that door, they will begin to experience this reunion, this divine understanding that all along, our divinity has never wavered.
Never die in my heart. I feel you all are my brothers.
Create a world with no fear. Together we'll cry happy tears. See the nations turn their souls. can.